Hello, this is Crispin Flintoff. Please subscribe and get alerts for this channel because we are putting content out that is not seen elsewhere and people need to know about it. Thank you. I'm really pleased to be joined on Crispin Flintoff Show by Sarah Wilkinson. How are you doing, Sarah?
I'm okay. Thank you. I'm recovering.
Oh, well, it's good to know that you're okay because what we heard on social media about what happened to you, I just can't imagine how terrifying it must have been. Can you tell people what happened?
Yeah, well, I think we were woken up about 7:10, and the street was full of police vehicles, black vans, police cars, police arrest vehicles. I don't know, about 16 or 17, mostly plainclothes. I suppose that the anti-terror squad, some uniformed. And I thought, well, they're going to break down the door, so I may as well open the door. There's no point. I could see that they were going to break down the door, so I opened it. And then they just literally barged in. I asked for a warrant. They said they had one, but they weren't going to reveal it. So I asked again to see the warrant, and he said, I don't have to show it to you. And then they were in the house, and I was kind of frog marched upstairs. I wasn't allowed to get dressed. I wasn't allowed to take my medications for my Crohn's. Basically, I wasn't allowed to do anything apart from once I was upstairs. I said, well, can I at least take my dressing gown off? And they slapped these handcuffs on, so I couldn't even do that. The handcuffs were so tight that it cut the circulation off to my hands and fingers, and they were very, very painful. They weren't going to release them or unscrew them in any way. And then, they sort of pushed my son against the wall, and I was sort of frog marched out into a van. And during the time that I was away, these balaclava-clad men, I mean, a lot of them unmarked, literally ransacked the house, took every piece of computer equipment, every phone, even phones that aren't mine. I'm not even on the list. I don't even recognize some of the items. So whether they've made some up, we don't know, but there's items that I know that I've never owned. But they also took money. It's not on the list. They took my passport, that's not on the list. So I've now got to hand in my passport, but I can't because they've actually taken it, but they haven't declared that they've taken it, which will be an entrapment. I will probably get arrested for not producing my passport, but they have actually taken it. But they also took about £200 worth of cash out of my wallet. And then they scattered my mother's ashes all over the attic. I had a horrendous day yesterday, literally scraping my mother's ashes out of old picture frames. They were everywhere. I've never had to do anything so horrendous as that before. And the urn obviously is meant to be 3/4 full. The urn is now half full. So my mother's ashes are still scattered in places that I can't retrieve them, in parts of the attic. I just can't retrieve them. And then they kind of made it look like they hadn't made a mess in the living room, but what they did in my room, my personal bedroom, was completely ransack it and turn everything upside down. So everything that was in the wardrobe is now in another cupboard. Everything that was in my filing cabinet is now in a basket. All my underwear was actually in another chest that I use for art. And then all that art equipment is all just thrown everywhere. Christmas decorations, broken, smashed. I can't tell you. I can't even get into parts of the room to tidy it up. It's like I'm going to have to do one item at a time. But they have literally looted. They've actually stolen stuff. And also, they hid stuff inside the mattress. Now, it's only by pure coincidence I couldn't find my Crohn's card. My Crohn's card was gone, which I need as somebody who has Crohn's. But I found that this morning just by coincidence. They had obviously turned the mattress over and there was a hole. And I thought, well, that's funny because there isn't a spring sticking in the back in my back, which there normally is. And then I looked underneath and I just saw the tiny, tiny element of the bag that has my Crohn cards in sticking out from the mattress underneath. So we lifted the mattress up and we were able to pull these things out. So some of the things that were missing that I'd thought they'd stolen, they had hidden so well. It's just coincidence I found them. So extraordinarily malicious looting and displacement of property. I mean, it's possible that, you know, my passport's on the roof somewhere, but, you know, they've right. taken some foreign money as well. I mean, they've taken about £7,000 worth of computer equipment and devices. So I'm obviously... It's only because somebody's come in. I'm not allowed to touch electronic devices. So somebody's come in to help log me into you. They didn't say I can't do interviews, but I'm not allowed to have a phone. So if I have a fire, I can't even ring 999. I can't connect with my ex-husband who has terminal cancer. I can't ring him. I can't phone him. I can't request for help. I can't ring the fire service. And even my TV is considered an electronic device because it's a smart TV. So technically I can't watch TV because I'd have to touch it to turn it on. The bail restrictions are pretty much inhuman, I would say. People can exist without phones, and I'm not implying that, but I have five floors. If I fall downstairs, I can't ring anyone. I can't ring an ambulance. I'm not allowed to use a phone. That's kind of a flat rule. And I'm not allowed to buy one. I'm not allowed to replace any equipment. And I'm not allowed to use any social media platform. And I'm not allowed to continue reporting as a journalist. So that's everything gone. My whole everything. And I live in a very small rural area. I'm not allowed to travel. That's another thing. No travel documents, no train tickets, no bus tickets, nothing that enables travel. So I live in a remote place with one shop. I can't even do online shopping, or I can't even get food that my village doesn't sell. So I'm now basically, this is almost a house arrest without it being a house arrest. So yeah, the conditions of the looting, I'm going to call it looting because they have stolen stuff and not listed it. So I can never claim it back. The money has just been pocketed by one of them. My son was treated badly. He was sort of thrown out of the house while they did this. And then I was held without any medication, no food, because without my meds, I can't eat. So therefore if I was going to be there for a week, which is very possible, I couldn't eat. And I thought, well, if I'm here for 7 days, I'm not going to survive this. So, it's like terrorism against civilians and the balaclavas, hiding their identity. I think that felt like this was a terrorist raid. But not only that, when I was in the police van, they didn't drive to the police station. They went a different way. And there was a point during this journey, I thought, they're not police. I've actually been abducted here. I've been kidnapped. They aren't police. They're not driving the right way. Shrewsbury is that way. And we're going towards Hereford. And my son was told I was going to Shrewsbury. And we weren't driving the right way. We drove, all the way somewhere else. Then they did this enormous 3-point turn with this convoy of vehicles. So there was a point where I suddenly thought, well, they haven't shown me any ID. Actually, these may not be police. So the whole experience was meant to be as terrifying as possible. Also implying that I couldn't have a lawyer. And then I reminded them under Section 12, I can have a lawyer. And only then did I get one. Had I not known the law, I would have been sat in a cell without a lawyer for the whole time. So it was, yeah, it was horrifying. It really was.
I find it unbelievable what you've just told me.
I think my mother's ashes for me has been the worst part of it, that they would, that they would just they've damaged the urn, but they would just tip them out as if they were looking for something that I might have hidden. And then they knelt in them. They literally had sort of skid marks through my mother's ashes. I have never had to do anything like that before. And it's just desecration, not just of my home, but of somebody's actual remains. Unbelievable.
So you were in custody from sort of being arrested at 7:30 in the morning. You were in custody. When did you come out?
It was quite late at night. I didn't know if I was going to be released. I think the thing is, once the counterterrorism squad had gone and the CID had left, Shrewsbury Police didn't really know why I was there. And I don't think they particularly had a problem with me. And so it's not a very big station. And I think they were quite keen to release me. I think if the counterterrorism unit hadn't have left, then I would have had to stay a lot longer. But once they'd gone, I think they were kind of wondering, well, why is she under arrest? She hasn't actually done anything. She's here for posting online content and she's a journalist and I have my press passes. Luckily, they didn't take those. Although they were difficult to locate, but they haven't taken them. So everything I do is journalistic. I have a press release. I quote the author of the article normally, and I just basically tell the news. That's what my account is. It's a news hub. So for Shrewsbury Police were, well, why, we don't really know why you're here, but we're not going to give you your meds, and so you can't eat. I sort of left in that situation of thinking, well, if this is going to be 7 days long, I'm actually not going to survive without food. And without meds, I may not survive without a Crohn's flare. And then I'll end up in hospital anyway. But then I thought, well, I did ask, they sent in a nurse or a doctor. And I actually asked her if she could. I didn't trust that she was medically qualified because she said, I'm not giving you your meds. I said, well, if I was diabetic, would you refuse me insulin? And she said, yes. So I said, well, so you'd actually put my life at risk because you would refuse me? And she said, yes. So I said, do you know how to spell Crohn's? Because that for me, if a medical person doesn't know how to spell it, because it's a bit of a funny spelling, that for me says they're not medically qualified. And she didn't know how to spell it. And then I kind of thought, I actually don't think that you are medically qualified. And with that, she left. And then it was the other custody, the chap that actually makes sure that everybody is okay, that persuaded her to come back into the room. But no, I did get some meds, but far too late. So obviously when I arrived home, I don't know, it was about midnight or something, and I started to be really ill because I had no medications. I can control this as long as I have my meds. So no food all day and no meds. And they had given me a cup of tea on the promise that I could have my medications so that my body didn't reject the tea. And then they said no meds after I drank it. So they technically poisoned me because they shouldn't have given me that cup of tea if they weren't going to give me my meds. So, it was fractious because I was starting to panic. I'm going to have a Crohn's flare. I'm going to be ill. They're not going to attend to me. I don't think that they're going to get paramedics. I think what they'll do is they'll just leave me. And I was starting to panic. So because I was aware that I didn't think this woman was qualified. A doctor knows how to spell the word Crohn's. And she didn't. And she didn't know anything about the illness either. That, for me, was suspicious.
So going back to what you said, this was about something you posted online. Do you have any idea what it was that you
It is
posted?
everything. It is a year's worth of news that I have broadcast. It's a year's worth from October the 7th, from the day of a Al-Aqsa flood, right to the day before I was arrested. So it is hundreds. I mean, I probably post about between 30 and 80 news articles a day. So you can imagine how many tweets this is, or I don't know, posts. You can imagine how many this is. This is a lot. So even though they had images of about 300, there wasn't time in the interview to go through every single one. So they skipped a lot. But my solicitor looked at the ones that they had given him, and he said, "Well, this is just news. This isn't incitement. This all you've done is reported the news. That there is they've got absolutely nothing on you here. This is just news." And I looked at them, and it was just news. So it is because I'm pro-Palestinian. It's because I'm broadcasting news from Gaza. It is because I'm connected, if you like, with the people in Gaza. And it's purely to silence journalists. It's like what they did with Richie Medhurst in exactly the same way. And I think Craig Murray as well. It is to silence the people who are reporting on a genocide. And the point of that is so that if no one's reporting on it, they can continue the genocide. They can kill everybody, and nobody is reporting on it. So you'll find out retroactively what's happened in Gaza when it's all finished and over. But because we're reporting on it on a daily, on a daily basis, that is what the government doesn't want. It doesn't want people to know what's happening to the people of Gaza, how many deaths a day, how many children are being massacred and piled up into plastic bags. It doesn't want people to know this. And so the only way they can do this is by silencing the journalists and the people that broadcast the news. They are facilitating the genocide to the point that they can't allow people to know the facts and the details and the death toll and the circumstances around some of these very, very horrific school massacres that the Israeli regime has been committing. They don't want that to be on social media, but they're not banning the social media users so much. What they're doing is taking away their ability to talk about Palestine. And so it instills fear in anybody that is basically waving a Palestinian flag. You can't say things like you can't support the resistance. You can't support Palestinians in any other way, which, I'm part of the Rebuild Gaza charity. So we're getting wells dug in Gaza to provide clean water. They wanted to know the location of these Palestinian people that we were working with. And you see, once they have the location, then the Israelis can bomb them directly. So it's very, very sinister.
So
And
the police were asking you for location of Palestinians in Gaza.
They want phone numbers. They want everything. Of course, I declined. I did a no comment interview, as you do. It was very hard because sometimes you wanted to say. I mean, they went through lots of names of lots of towns. These guys are so racist. The question, I'm gonna let you know this question. Why do you think Palestinians are better than white people? And I broke my no comment at that point, and I said that is a racist question. It's an appalling question to ask. I'm no commenting it, but I have to say that what you've just said is one of the most racist statements I've ever known. And so that it had that sort of Shin Bet, slight Mossad element to it, that we mustn't see Palestinians as equal to white people. And I use that word very carefully. We must, we need to degrade them. We need to dehumanize them. But you're humanizing them, and we want to know why. And I broke my no comment just to call him racist, and he sort of chuckled. And then they continued to ask exactly the same question. So, yeah, the interview went on for quite some hours because there's so many tweets that I've done, but every single one of them is a journalistic tweet. There may have been one or two hashtags I used that they didn't like, but it certainly isn't in any way condoning anything or, you know, what it is reporting on the ground what's happening in Gaza. And sometimes getting videos directly from Gaza so that people can see what's happening. They are trying to stop that from happening, trying to stop Palestinians from being able to give us the direct footage and for us to be able to post it. So there were a lot of questions that were very, I would, you know, very suspiciously biased towards protection of the Israeli regime and also preservation of their ability to continue the genocide. That, I think, was the worrying element of it, is we're trying to commit a genocide here. We help weaponize it. We, you know, we're invested in it, and you are exposing us. So we're going to stop you from being able to connect with anyone, to ring anyone, to speak to anyone, to tweet, to post, to use any social media. The only thing they left out is can I do interviews? As long as I don't touch the actual electronic device, technically I'm not breaking my bail because there isn't anywhere it says I can't do interviews. But I obviously then can't post it myself.
Can't watch it.
It's just the sinister element. There was a Shin Bet element about it, very Mossad. And I think just these questions of the fact that we shouldn't like Palestinians, we shouldn't be supporting them. I think that I'm not sure whether somebody who isn't a Zionist would say such a thing. A human being is a human being, no matter what color, race, religion, where they come from. A human life is a human life. So to be instructed as to why would I deem that Palestinians are equal to us, is what he said, is a very odd question and a very sinister question, I think.
Mm. I can't actually imagine how you must be feeling. I mean, you must still be unable to it's almost you're trying to process it still. You can't have got through the trauma. I mean, it's
well, I was injured. So the handcuffs did have injured my hands because there's obviously because they drove, they turned like a 3/4 hour journey into nearly 2 hours because they drove a different way. And so by then the circulation in my hands were, you know, my fingers were blue. And I was in a lot of pain and they threw me around a lot. He said he was trying not to, but, you know, obviously no seatbelts in police vans. So I fell a lot off the actual bench thing. I just slid off it and the pain I was in was enormous. So, it was pretty horrific. The treatment was horrific because, you know, this is like counterterrorism. So you're being treated as if you're the one committing the genocide. You know, we have to remember that Netanyahu is committing a genocide and we are anti the death and the killing and the massacring of people. We're opposing a genocide. And yet we're the ones being vilified and turned into the terrorists, if you like, so much so that we can't even use a phone. And yet the people who are doing the killing are allowed to celebrate it. They're allowed to incite online. They're allowed to invoke Amalek. If you remember, Netanyahu invoked it's a biblical story, basically, for those who don't know, about the fact that every man, woman, and child, an unborn fetus, was to be massacred in or that, you know, the whole civilization was to be genocided, if that is a word. And he invoked that. Now, if he'd invoked the Holocaust, that would have raised some eyebrows. But what he did was invoke a much more ancient story. And many people had never heard of Amalek before and didn't know anything about the Amalekites. So it's hard to say. So he's allowed to incite genocide. But if we oppose it, if we say, yeah, but under international law, killing thousands and thousands of people and children and innocent civilians is a violation of international law. If we say that, then we are we're labeled as being terrorists, which is what they've done, which if you're working could end your career. You know, I don't have the money to replace thousands of pounds worth of equipment. They've taken everything. They've even taken the charging cables for the lights. I have lights on the stairs. Now, these charging cables have nothing to do with a phone or a laptop, or you can't even use them for other devices. So they've taken away cables to charge up lights. They've taken torches, they've taken microphones, and I'm still finding things missing. So I'm not realizing that I haven't got things until I've gone to find them and they're not there. Especially the money. But the passport is a difficult one because I am now required to hand in my passport in 7 days' time. But they've taken my passport and they've not included it in the list. So in a way, it's entrapment. When I go to hand in my passport and I can't, then I'm in breach of bail and they'll arrest me because they'll say that I've hidden my passport or... But right. Actually, they've taken it, but they've denied that they've taken it. So now how do I hand in a passport that's been taken but not listed? I'm completely trapped and there's nothing I can do. And, you know, not being allowed to travel and yet I have to sign in. That's four bus journeys, which I can't reach the place I have to sign into in a day. So I would be stranded. And when I said, well, I can't get home, if I sign in on this particular day, there isn't a bus to get me back. He said, well, bring a tent. Well, I'm 61. And he's asking me now into November, this will go through winter. Because I can't get home, I have to take a tent. Yeah, it was sarcastic and a bit of a joke. But the point is, I actually wouldn't be able to get home. So the conditions of my bail are impossible. So I will likely be arrested again and probably held a minimum of 5 years because I can't, I actually physically can't follow the bail conditions. I can't travel. I don't have the ability to travel, and yet they're asking me to travel, and then I can't get home if I do travel, and I can't hand in my passport.
Can I just come in? I'm just thinking, I mean, with the money, I'm sure we could raise money for a crowdfunder for you to help with what you've lost. But the other thing is, with a passport, can you not get a quick replacement if we raise the money for that?
It's on the bail conditions that I'm not allowed to buy or purchase or apply for any travel documents at all. That includes train tickets and, but definitely passport. So I can't apply for a new passport and I can't buy a new passport. I can't claim it as lost and neither can I hand it in. It's an entrapment to jail me for breach of bail conditions. There isn't anything I can do about it. The other thing they might do is re-raid the house to look for it, which I'm expecting. One officer mentioned that he did see my passport, so they'll use that. But the point is they've taken it along with the money, along with some foreign money as well, and other documents they've taken that I can't get back. With Crohn's, I've ended up on house arrest, really, because... You know, without my meds, I couldn't go out and I can't go out anyway because I can't go anywhere. So, and I need my phone in case I get into trouble and I get ill in a isolated place. I need to be able to ring an ambulance if I have a Crohn's flare. Can't do that. So really, I can't go out. I think for somebody that is just reporting the news, That's all I'm doing. I'm reporting what other people are writing about. I don't normally write the articles. I post other journalistic articles. So for somebody who does that to end up in this situation, being treated in this way, manhandled, injured, and made ill. With my house, this is the only room that is not upside down, that is not wrecked, that is not, they've smashed candles. I mean, why would you smash all the Christmas candles? They've broken all the Christmas lights. Why would you, you know, actually attack personal property and then deny it? And they will continue to deny it, by the way. They say they take photographs to prove they don't damage things, but what they do is they take the photographs before and not after. So,
well, look, can I do? I mean, did you expect this in any way?
I don't know. I think if you are pro-Palestinian, then you always expect at some point waving a flag might get you arrested. It does these days. I don't think. I think I probably at the back of my mind thought, oh, at some point they will try to silence me. I think living in this area, I actually thought Mossad are more likely to shoot me and then bury me in a field and you never see me again. To actually this type of house raid, purely for posting other people's articles, other journalists' articles. And I am protected by my press pass as well. As a journalist, my press pass is accredited. And so as a journalist, I'm allowed to do this. So I'm not entirely sure whether I thought that it would go this way. I think at some point I thought something might happen. But this was something else entirely. I mean, I you know, when I found my mother's ashes everywhere, that's not really, I think that's outside of the law. I would say that is desecration of somebody's remains. The only people who really desecrate remains are the Israelis. So there has, that's why I said that there's this real kind of Israeli feel about it, that to desecrate the remains of somebody's parent to the point that they can't even retrieve the ashes from the floor and everywhere where they've gone is completely unlawful. It's a complete violation of humanity. I don't even know if there is a law that covers this, but it's certainly the most inhumane thing that I've experienced. And I don't think I'll ever get over it. I never thought that I would be scraping up, you know, the parts of my mother. And it made me think of the Palestinians, you know, like obviously they're collecting their children in plastic bags and, you know, trying to scrape the body parts off the walls of buildings. So there was this sort of symbolic, it certainly wasn't as bad as that. But there was an element of similarity, if you like, that we've desecrated your mother's urn. And that is what the Israelis are doing to the Palestinian children, to the point that families can't even bury more than a finger in some instances. So there were similarities. And yet I am not in any way saying that what the Palestinians are going through, that is far worse. They're facing the bullets and bombs every day. And I'm not. All I have now is a house that's wrecked, but I haven't had it bombed. So I'm not trying in any way to compete. But I think it's just the similarities, the symbolism of the desecration. The fact that they seem to attack everything that was, I guess, I mean, I'm not Christian myself, but, you know, I have Christmas decorations. So everything they attacked seemed to do with anything, you know, like anything with the cross on it or the Christmas decorations. Those are the things that actually took the worst battering. The things that everything else was just either broken or destroyed or swapped or it's been hidden. My filing cabinet it's not really a cabinet, but everything was in alphabetical order. I mean, that's just, you know, I'm finding paperwork in my underwear drawer and I'm finding underwear in my filing box. They've literally just put things back any old how, but in deliberately very difficult places to find. So I've lost a pair of trousers. They've literally hidden stuff. And I'm still trying to locate. They've also, I think, bugged the house because there's putty all over the floor. And I did ask an investigator what that might be. And he said they buried bugs into the wall and then they've plastered over the top of them, very thin layer of putty. So somewhere there are, I think, bugs in the wall. So the surveillance element of it is also quite Israeli. But we'll locate them. That isn't a problem. Again, that's going to be sorted. I've got someone coming around to take out all the bugs. But the fact that they just left the evidence that they had been using wall putty to attach these, probably microphones and cameras, embedded into the wall. So technically they've damaged the property literally as well. But we've yet to find them. That will happen. It's a clear up campaign and it's going to take weeks, literally weeks.
Well, if your bail restrictions don't increase if you are able to do more interviews, we'll keep you in the loop on someone else's electronic device, obviously, and then you can be of service to the cause that way. The we can put the videos of what you say out to other people and they can hear it. So they might be able to stop you in some ways, but if they've failed to put that condition in your bail thing, then we can work around it.
Yeah. As long as I don't touch the electronic device, technically, I can still make videos. I think the only difficulty is being on top of the news, because obviously for me to be on top of the news, I need to use an electronic device. I need to be on the internet. And that is the problem, is that when I make the videos, I'm going to be uninformed. But that's another reason why these bail conditions are the prison sentence, because I can no longer tell people what's happening if I can't view it, if I can't see it and I can't hear it and I can't talk to anyone in Gaza anymore, then I don't know what's happening there. And if I don't know what's happening, then I won't know what to talk about in the next video. It's ridiculous in this day and age to have to do this. But what's worse is this fall into fascism. That this is, it's to be gagged completely of communicative, basically any sort of form of communication whatsoever, to be banned from explaining to people what is happening in Gaza, to be banned from looking and viewing and listening and learning, and to continue working with the charity that I was working with, to be disabled from that. That is, I don't think I even have remembered reading stories from World War II where it's been that draconian and that strict. And then this threat of, if you do any of these things, it's instant 5 years in prison, up to 15 years. So that it can be indefinite. They've kind of brought back the old Irish indefinite detention thing. That seems to be, it's very similar. So we can jail you, but we don't have to release you. And there's no court. So even if you can't win a case, and there's no lawyer, so you can't argue your case. So all of these things, it's worse than 1984. It's like something in the 12th century. And also to allow polio to actually become a pandemic. It's kind of, what is going on? What's happening to the world? Not just this slide into fascism and the fact that these laws are being created to silence legitimate people who aren't any threat to anyone. I'm not a violent person and I've never heard, I don't even, swat a fly. So to criminalize me for caring about other people being killed is the most shocking twist. It's just total inhumanity. And I don't know whether this is a world that I am liking. I don't know whether I feel that I can really fully exist in it anymore.
Yeah, but there's many, many of us And you know, you're what happened to you. You've been traumatized effectively by being in a room with all these policemen. They've not given you any food. They've taken your meds. There's all the fear about what they're doing in your house. There's so many of them, balaclavas. Just all these images must be flashing through your mind. You would think, oh, what kind of world are we in? But the point is, there's a lot of us. You're not on your own. You're not on your own. And it's and as you keep saying, this is about Palestine and people in Gaza, especially. We're all going to keep going. And what you've just said has motivated me to do more. And I, if they want to come for me in this shed, they can come for me too. If they come for you, they'll come for me. And we should all be aware of that. Everyone's got to fight for you as an example. I won't shut up. And I hope other people watching this will not shut up and will be inspired to do exactly what you've done and do maybe do your work in reporting until you come out of this situation and can do it yourself. Other people have got to take the baton and do the same thing.
The support has been amazing. I have been shown, there's been lots of messages from Gaza itself and Palestine, Central Palestine, which are very, it's a really lovely gestures. And yeah, I saw Roger Waters and quite a lot of people. I did see the support from a lot of friends as well. So, I mean, that has been amazing and that's kept me going. Especially the messages from Gaza itself, because despite they're going through this most hideous genocide that the world, I mean, there's 195 countries involved in this genocide. They're literally up against 195 Goliaths. Even the countries that say they're pro-Palestinian are somehow attached to either products or insurances that go into the military. But the Palestinians are literally up against the entire world. And so, really, you know, they're the ones that need our support. You know, right, my house is a mess, but I have a house. Most of the people I now know in Gaza, all the people I've known for years, have either been killed, they've buried 39 members of their family, they have no homes. So actually, you know, any money really should go to the Palestinians because, you know, I have shelter and you know, there is a shop, so I can have some food. And I think that really, okay, that this is an inconvenience. And also, I would really like to keep on making sure that the world knows what is happening in Gaza. I don't want them to feel abandoned by me. But at the same time, I'm living in relative comfort, despite the arrest, even if I'm jailed, which I possibly will be over this passport thing, I'm still not being bombed. And I think that, and I also, I'm not at risk of catching polio. We now have this polio disease spreading throughout Gaza. And so really, you know, all right, look, I've been arrested. I think this is my 26th time. So I'm not unused to being treated badly by the police, but it's still not, it's nothing in comparison to what the Palestinians are facing. So we need to keep it in perspective. If I went to court, I could win my case. But the thing is with the Terrorism Act is that it is unlikely to go to trial. They'll either drop it or they'll keep extending the bail. The bail conditions are actually the jail sentence because not being able to be a journalist, not being able to report the news is actually the jail sentence. That the silencing is the sentence. When they eventually come to either jail me, there probably won't be a trial, that I probably won't have access to a lawyer. So, you know, and you know, I'll just be jailed for 5 years. What happens then? I don't know. Whether the community could even rally to getting my release is very doubtful. And when we look at the situation of Julian Assange, we know what can happen when people go to jail and they have no rights. And So I think that that would be more concerning for me. At the moment, I yes, I have a lot of tidying up to do, but I'm not burying my family members, and I'm not, you know, searching for my children. And so we need to keep it in perspective. But everybody's support is, it has been amazing, and I can't thank everyone enough, and it has helped get me through. So thank you.